My Uncle Silas was very fixed and very firm in the notion that women were no good to you. "They're all as after you, boy," he said. "All as after you." I was at the time very small, and it was much too soon for me to point out that Silas, on the contrary, was always after them.
"Like her," he said. "Take her. All as after me."
At the age of 91, my Uncle Silas still had something of the look of a crusty farmyard cock. He gave a great sniffing sort of sigh, fixed his bloodshot eye on me in cunning reminiscence, and whipped a dewdrop off his nose.
"She won half a tartar," he said. "Everlasting after me, night and day."
"Doing what?" I said.
"Plaguing on me."
"For what?"
"Tormenting on me, whittling me to death."
His bloodshot eye had a crack of scarlet glee across it. "What was her name?" I said.
"Toots," he said.
"It's a funny name," I said.
"Ah, she were a funny woman. She were very near the death on me."
Since my Uncle Silas had reached the 90s and looked, in his leathery and ruddy heartiness, good for another dozen years, it seemed a very good moment to ask how death by Miss Tuts had been avoided so long ago.
"Well, I'll give her the G up," he said. "That's how."
It seemed a very good moment also to ask how he had given her the G up, and if possible, why and what with. But he surprised me a little when the answer came.
"I laid her out with a Bedfordshire clanger," he said.
I did not know what a Bedfordshire clanger was, and it occurred to me for a moment that it was an awful sort of lie. But he said,
"Sort of puddin', suet, hard as an hog's back."
We were sitting among the gooseberry bushes at the time, by the bottom of Silas's garden, by the wood, where the sun lay warm by a fringe of hazels. Gooseberries, ripe and golden green and fat as plums, bowed down the branches of the squat trees. And now and then Silas lazily pinched one with crabbed fingers and split it open and shot its sweet, jellied seeds onto his ripe and ruby tongue.
"Kept a boarding house," he said.
For some moments he squirted gooseberry seeds into his mouth and chewed through what I hoped were moments of reminiscence, champing at the sour skin. His gills seemed to laugh up and down from the acid of the gooseberries, like the gills of an old and crusty cock.
"Them are the ones you want to be careful on," he said.
I bit on a gooseberry too. Silas fixed his eyes on a point somewhere far away, and I could smell the strong odour of corduroys warm in the sun.
"Young chap at the time," he said. "That's all. Apprentice. Innocent young chap."
It has always been difficult for me to conjure up a picture of my Uncle Silas at the age of innocence. But I did not say anything, and he went on.
"Me and Arth Sugars, we boarded together."
I wanted to know who Arth Sugars was, and he said,
"Arth? Well, he weren't all ninepence. Had a kink somewhere, wanted to be an inventor."
"What did he invent?" I said.
"Well, for a start off, nothing much," he said.
He picked another gooseberry and squashed it against his tongue and gave a great sucking sound at the bursting purse of seeds.
"Chronic," he said several times. "Chronic."
And then went off suddenly with a horrible reminiscence of that far-off boarding house where he and Mr. Sugars, the inventor, had starved.
"Day in and day out. The same sort of grub, no different, weekdays and Sundays, no different, all as the same."
"What grub?" I said.
"Puddin', just puddin'."
"What sort?"
"Plain."
He shook his head with great sadness, so that I, too, could feel how terrible it was.
"Think on it, dinner, tea, supper, week in, week out, months on it, just plain."
"Suet?" He turned on me with a horrible sort of bark that made me feel ashamed.
"Well, it might have been suet once, but when we got it, ah, boy, it wasn't a prison bread."
He paused and at that moment I suddenly discovered a defect in all this. I could not picture Miss Tutts. I could not conceive what sort of person physically she was.
"Oh, we'll come into that," he said. "What do you think she were?"
"I think?"
"Ah, fat or thin?"
Thin, I said. He cried out with a bark of triumph.
"Oh, no, you'd say that. Thin, you says. You think she were thin, you says. She were mean and a tartar, so she must be thin. Aye, ain't that it?"
"Well, I suppose I..."
"Well, you're supposing wrong. Fat, that's what she were. Like a 20-score sow in pig."
He looked at me with such an air of pained and sharp correction that I said I was sorry I'd been mistaken.
"And a good thing for you, because now you'll understand better, see, her so fat and me and Arth so thin. It makes it worse, don't it? Makes it chronic, don't it?"
I said it made it very chronic. I said something, too, about how greatly they must have suffered, and he said,
"Suffered? Oh, we suffered till we couldn't suffer no longer."
"And then what did you do?"
"Put paid to her."
I asked him how they'd put paid to her. Slowly he squeezed another gooseberry against his bright red tongue and said,
"First of all, we give her a Sidlitz powder."
"Wasn't she very well?" I said.
"Oh, she were well, but we just wanted to see what happened. We just put the Sidlitz powder in the... well, that doesn't matter now. Have another gooseberry, boy. Help yourself to another gooseberry."
I helped myself to another gooseberry and said I hated Sidlitz powders. "They fizz," I said.
"Yes, that's it. That's just it. They fizz."
His gills began laughing again with the droll shagginess of an old cock. And I said, "Didn't it make a difference?"
"Well, it made a difference, in a way, but not to us."
"The puddings, didn't they get better?"
"Not until afterwards," he said darkly. "Not until afterwards."
My Uncle Silas relapsed into a veiled and evil sort of meditation, one eye closed. He did not speak for some time, and I began to grow impatient to know what lay behind that afterwards. I was afraid for some moments that he would fall asleep there, in the warm July air among the gooseberry bushes, and never tell me. Presently I nudged him and asked him not to go to sleep, and he flickered an eye.
"Oh, don't whittle me, boy. I'm recollecting on it."
He suddenly gave an immense and fruity chuckle, something like a joyful belch partly arrested. It was a sound I knew long afterwards as something always preceding the greatest lie. Then he shook his head as if it were all terribly serious and said,
"Millions on 'em."
"Millions of what?" I said.
"Puddin's."
He did not look at me. He fixed his bloodshot, wicked eye on the distance and grunted,
"Never see nothing like it, boy. You never see nothing like it."
And then went on to tell me, between whiny belches that rippled out of his corduroyed belly like waves, how he and Arth Sugars, tired of that long prison diet of suet, decided to discover for themselves how Miss Tutts made and kept up the supply, and how they crept down into the basement at midnight with a candle, and found there, in rows upon rows, on high shelves, enough puddings to feed an army.
"Millions on 'em. All wrapped up in old knickers and shimmies and shirts and..."
"What did you do?" I said.
"Filled 'em."
I asked him how they filled them and with what, and he said airily,
"Well, different flavours."
"Strawberry and raspberry?"
"Ah, better than that. Some on 'em we filled with brimstone. Then we had a Sidlitz or two, a few Epsoms. Then some as Arth invented. Then I don't know as we didn't have a... Well, anyway, we was halfway through the brimstones when we had company."
"Who?"
"Her,"
he said. He shook his head.
"Never seen nothing like it in your life. Half-starved naked in a nightshirt."
"Enough to catch her death," I said.
"It were. There we were atop of the stepladder, and there half holding the candle and giving me the different flavours. I was just picking up a pudding when she come raving in.
What happened?
Dropped it.
On her?
On her. Give her such a clout. It just shows how hard they work. Just shows you. Give her such a clout, she were cold in a couple of seconds.
That was awful, I said. What did you do?
Awful? Do? Arth run upstairs like an hare for a burnt feather and the smelling salts.
Yes, I said, but what did you do?
Kept her warm. That's what you're going to do when folks are cold, ain't it? And she were very cold, I tell you, in that there nightgown. Very cold.
I did not speak. A little doubt assailed me. I could not in that moment reconcile the picture of my Uncle Silas keeping Miss Tutts warm in the basement at midnight with the way the story had begun. There seemed suddenly great discrepancies somewhere. Hadn't it begun by Miss Tutts tormenting him? Hadn't she been a terror, a plague, and a Tartar? It seemed very strange to me that plaguing and tormenting and pursuit could end with Miss Tutts being warmed in my Uncle Silas's arms. Strange that things could change so quickly. And did things change, I said. You know, the puttins, were they better? My Uncle Silas fixed his roving, bloodshot eye on the distance, and with a delicious, spurting, juicy sound, squirted the seeds of another gooseberry against his tongue.
"Arter that," he said, "I were never in want for the nicest bit of puddin' in the